Talking to Katarina today, I don't know how to pronounce her name. It's Polish, Katarina, Katarina. Katarina is a burlesque dancer, a guidebook writer, podcaster, activist, and a feminist, and a lot of other things as well. She came on my show and talked a little bit about herself, of course, and her background, plus burlesque dancing and its interplay with feminism. And then we spent a lot of time talking about Poland and its newly discovered or newly established, let's say, abortion policy, which is super, super weird, considering that it's 2021 right now. And Katarina and her friends and other women that are concerned, mainly women, probably some men as well, has started an organization that is called Ont Czechia, the Czech auntie, that is helping women from Poland who want to come across the border to get abortion because it's not allowed in Poland anymore. So interesting talk, but none of this would be possible without the amazing sponsors. Firstly, Alfred Jobs, alfred.cz or Alfred Jobs in the app stores. It's a job app and a webpage where you can find jobs free to use. You're completely anonymous, available in English, Czech and Slovak. And you can set it up so that you only see jobs that are relevant to you. You don't have to browse through thousands of other jobs. And it saves you a lot of time. And a lot of different jobs, they're cool jobs. Every skill level, every education level, everybody can find something for them there. And then the Oat Bar Prague, oatmeals, skier, healthy goodies, juices, sent home, takeaway, open from 8:30 until 3 o'clock Monday to Thursday, and Fridays and Saturdays from 8:30 to 1:30. If you care about yourself, have food from the Oat Bar. Hello, on the bunker today we have Katarzyna. How do I say that name?
It was correct, you're a good student.
Oh, great. Or you have another name, Soria.
Blue.
Soria Blue.
Yeah, maybe that's easier to remember.
Yeah, but welcome to the bunker.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, are you happy to be here?
Very happy.
Yeah. You had a trouble finding it though. You went into the next building and to the top floor there.
And there was also like three other guys on the street engaged because you were shouting to me and I didn't hear it because of the headphones, because you know, music and podcasts and so on.
But I mean, half of the people you see out there on the street are one way or the other working for the bunker. That's just how it is. Not many people know.
Wow. Mm. I'm impressed.
Yeah. So we met in a bar.
Yes. Which bar?
Vulkova.
Not only.
No, we met and we continued to meet in other bars.
Late open bars.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was a bad hangover night.
Indeed.
But we had fun.
Yeah, and you know, now we really appreciate it in the COVID times.
Yeah. Yeah, you hold on to that memory of that horrible hangover, like you treasure it like a childhood memory.
Yes.
Anyway, so you are here. I'm going to call you Kate.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah. You're here because you're a little bit of everything, but there are two specific things, though, that I want to kind of highlight. But you do burlesque. You write guidebooks. You're a podcaster, activist, feminist, and a teacher. And now when you came here, you told me that you're doing translations as well.
Yeah, and I also kind of running some company for somebody. So you
do everything.
Yeah. Like, actually, I don't write guidebooks anymore, but I was doing this for many years. I stopped.
But what are you? If somebody asked you, what are you, Kate?
Women.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Nothing else?
I don't know. I thought you expect one word answer or something like that.
No.
Should I say more?
Yeah, we have a few more minutes.
Okay. I'm freelancing and I like it because that gives me the freedom to mix the kind of the professions. So I really like teaching, I like translating, I like burlesque, and I like podcasting. But if I do just, for example, just teaching all the time, it would be too monotony for me. So I always liked to mix it kind of, so few months I do something more, then I do something more of something else, and so on. So this was really much working for me last years.
Yeah, I think we know each other now for like 4 years or something like that, right?
A lot, yeah. I think at least 4 years, maybe more even. I don't know.
Yeah, and during that time, I got to know you a little bit better. I mean, it's not like we meet every day, but still, I somehow, and I've also kind of seen you from the distance, you know, on social media and stuff like that. And it's...
I thought you were stalking me.
Well.
Yeah.
No, but I think like in some way you're an idealist I really like that about you because we are very opposite in some way. I'm a super rational, non-dreamy, rooted to the ground Taurus, and you're more of a, you know, you believe in the good.
Yeah, unfortunately sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm kind of rational, I think, in like daily things. So in sense of if I have to do something, there is some project to do or something to prepare, I'm super realistic. I have really good planning skills and kind of thinking about some positive possible problems or crisis management and so on. So I'm kind of like really strongly both foot on the ground.
Mm.
But in some vision of the world, I think definitely I try to be, or I am maybe, you're right. Like deeply in my heart, I believe that most of the people are good and it will be better and better. Because like, on the other hand, I mean, it's just easier to live like that when you think it somehow. It's also like I have this ability and my friends are laughing at it. I also don't remember much stuff, like a lot of stuff from my life I don't remember and my friends do. And I have this tendency to some kind of suppress the bad stuff that happened to me. And sometimes I forgot, like I had really bad breakup. And I totally forgot how the guy treated me. And my friends have to remind me because I totally like suppress it from my brain.
Mm.
So I think it's also connected with this.
Mm.
That I think I just want to have this positive vision
positive
of the world.
Vibes.
Positive vibes. And it's just easier to live like that, I think.
Yeah.
Even if sometimes it's not true.
That's true. But you're from Poland.
Yes.
And how did that all start? Where are you from? Big family?
Probably it started from the sex.
Yeah.
Somewhere around Christmas because I was born in September.
Uh-huh.
But don't know much more about this. So I was born in Poland, actually in the like smaller city, 50,000 near the Czech border, actually.
Mm.
But it was the time that there was no European Union in Poland and Czech Republic or Schengen or something. So it wasn't that easy to get to Czech Republic.
Mm.
Yeah, and I don't know, like I went to school.
Yeah, you had a big family. You had siblings or?
I have just one brother. He's older, 3 years old. And he lives now in UK. He's doing IT stuff, like really high stuff. I don't know exactly what.
And your parents still live in Poland?
Yes, they do. In the same city, actually, which is super lovely. Cieszyn, you have to go there.
But you never, when we talk, you never mentioned your father to
No,
me.
Not much. I'm not much in contact with him in general.
Why is that?
He has drinking problem for like 20 years and it was big struggle in my attitude to that. You know, you always at the beginning you want to fight for it and talk and be angry and be good and all the things. And then at some point you get your mature view for it and you know that you cannot do much about it.
Mm.
So I kind of gave up. So I don't really...
And they are divorced, I guess. You're
not really.
But
not
they
really.
Don't live together.
Not really. No, no, no.
They don't live together.
They don't live together, but they're not divorced.
And what about your mom? She has been doing some like NGO work and stuff like that, right?
You told me. Yeah. She's officially retired, but you know, she was working in the same company as my father, which is like a private company, and her retirement is not very big, so she's still teaching math, which is kind of funny because whole my family is like math and physics and stuff like that, and then I am, don't know, like probably I was from the neighbors or something, whatever. And yeah, she's very much in, she's kind of taking care of dogs. She's taking the dogs from the shelter, and home and then looking for the new host for there. So every
like
time
a foster,
I go,
foster care.
Kind of, yeah. And she's super passionate about it. Like I think she did manage to find new homes for like, I don't know, over 100 dogs or something. And every time, this is funny, every time I go home, I don't know how many dogs there will be. And she has her own dogs, and then there is plus one or plus two or even plus three sometimes. So you never know who's going to be there. That's super funny.
Yeah. And how was it there? You got to school and did some education there? No, you went to Krakow or...
Yeah, I went to the like middle school, we called it. So when you finish, you have the maturity exam and you're like 19. And then I go to university to Krakow to study journalism and media communication, a bachelor degree. And in the second year of this, I started also the Slavic philology with Czech specialization. So I always wanted to kind of come to Czech Republic or...
Why was Czech Republic interesting to you?
I actually don't know. Sometimes this decision, you just like, I was living on the border. So there was this film festival, which is Kino na Granice, which is like a cinema on the border. And it was really, I was since the beginning of this festival there when it was growing and so on. So I saw a lot of Czech and Slovak movies. So probably this was kind of like, I don't know how I had this idea to remember. I was also trying to get to the film school, but not in the sense of directing, but like this, how do you call it? Like knowledge about the movies or something.
Like a film critic or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I got to the second like step, but that time I knew about the philology and decided for that. And it was a good decision because all of my best friends are from there, actually, so...
From university?
From the philology, yeah. And basically, so I was studying journalism and I was studying the language. So I always wanted to go for at least semester to Czech Republic, to Prague. And do we have a lot of time for the explanation for
it?
Yeah. No, actually, because this is very important, I think, in my attitude after to the some life stuff. Because the thing was, I was trying to get to Erasmus. It was third year of my university of the journalism, and I wanted to go to the Erasmus. And I knew some language already. My motivation was I wanted to write bachelor about some topic connected to Czech Republic. It was on journalism, and I also have a good grades, and I didn't get in. And it was like in the May or something, and said, okay, there was somebody better. Like, okay, that's life. And month after, somebody told me that actually somebody get in, but the girl has worse grade than me. She doesn't speak in Czech. She doesn't get this motivation to write bachelor about it. And I get really angry. This is so unfair. And I get really stubborn. I can be stubborn. I said, I will go there. And I was trying all the ways. I was contacting the foreign office in the university. The office of my institute, they all say, oh, you cannot because the Erasmus is the only way, blah, blah, blah. So then I said, okay, fuck it. And I wrote to the institute here, to Charles University, and they reply me instantly. And they say like, oh, this is the four possibilities, 1, 2, 3, 4, 2 didn't work, blah, blah. And I got in here.
On your own.
On my
own. Without the Erasmus.
Yeah, I didn't get any scholarship, but I mean, like, it's 5 months. You can survive on rohliki and butter or whatever. Fuck it. Can I swear?
As much as you want.
And but it was very important experience when you're like 21 or something, because life showed me that if you want, you have to just try. You know, different, like 5 people told me like, no, it's not possible. So I tried another way and I managed to do it. And I really like the institute here. It's really good. So I had this crazy idea that I would try to pass and get to the master studies here. And I got in. So I was studying here, and after, actually, there was no special reason to move back to Poland after 3 years. So, yeah.
But you struggled with the studies. You told me that once. You had some health issues during the studies.
Yeah, actually, so I was studying 3 different schools, and I had just bachelor in the end because I didn't finish the Slavic philology. Because it was 5 years that time, and I had individual program, which means that I was doing the exams only and didn't have to be present
in the school,
But after three semesters, they told me like, okay, or you come back or you have to quit because you cannot like have diploma master from the university when you're all the time in Prague.
Mm.
So I decided I quit. And I also didn't finish the media studies here, the master, because I got health problems and I was kind of out of life for a few months. And after I got better, I decided that I just don't want to like do it again, write it and do some exams again. I just wanted to move forward. And
what was wrong with you?
I had like depression. Actually, I had it when I was in high school for sure. But that time I didn't really ask anyone for help. I didn't know maybe the situation at home was also kind of difficult. So basically, didn't happen. And the things come, if you don't deal with this, they come back always. So basically it came back. I think I was overworked and everything. And so...
But how did you learn to just manage it then?
Like there was the point of it. I had like huge anxiety and everything. And I was always like, always this kind of like strong woman and I manage by myself and I do it myself. I can't know myself. So I was always like struggling maybe to go somewhere for help and maybe it's stupid. Maybe I shouldn't, but it reached to the point that there was no other way. And I was calling the crisis center actually in Prague. They get me because the psychiatrist I was calling somewhere else. They were all like, oh, we can take you in 2 weeks. And I'm like, I will not make it like 2 weeks.
And why? Were you suicidal then? Or?
No, not. I just not suicidal, just felt but like bad. I think this the worst was the anxiety. Like I was really have problem to getting out of the room and everything.
But you don't have any of this today. I mean, like you at least it's not very visible then. But maybe it's never visible.
It wasn't
visible
that time. Like the reaction of my brother, for example, was, what? She had depression. She's such a happy and cheerful person. So you don't see it. But actually the good part of it, and I totally like encourage everyone who even thinks that maybe they need the help to go, because when you get in the system, it's just everything gets easier. You got your psychiatrist, you can get psychotherapist or psychologist or something like that, and you already know that it's worth it and you do it. So I'm also like, I'm still sometimes going, but I also did like 2 years of psychotherapy or more, and it's super helped me. Definitely. So it was, I'm super happy for this experience.
But isn't it also with this, like when you kind of the most difficult step is to go and get the help.
Yeah.
Afterwards, it's actually often then you are part of some process, you know, you get into some work.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Of course, then it's not easy because you have to just work with yourself and your shit and whatever. But also for a few years, like I was on the pills and sometimes and I thought like, oh, my brain is like that, you know, like this chemistry of the brain. And it's just like that, you know, but then I got to the good psychotherapist and which really I got really good flow with him. And I realized that it's kind of to learn to work with your emotions. And then you get out of 80% of the problem, actually. So I think it's a great experience. And I think actually that everyone at some stage of their life should get like the experience, like not the anxiety and psychiatrist, but like therapy, for example, because we all have some shits from...
Yeah, I have childhood to teenage years or something.
And everything, and it's super beneficial, you know.
Yeah, and I think like I don't know anyone who went to a therapist and came out worse. You know, like it's you have nothing to lose to go there, you know?
I think the biggest regrets people say, and mine as well, why I didn't go earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
Like why? You know, why suffer so much?
But you then went on and got a corporate job for a very short time. And I think you told me once over a vodka shot that you were never going to be a corporate girl. But how did that happen? What was the plan?
Actually, it was like for the timeline, it was more or less the same time. So I was trying to finish the university, the third year, because I prolonged it a bit. And at the same time, I started to work. So it was also the problems got bigger than before and not possible to manage by myself because I was just overworked and over everything.
Mm.
And yeah, I got to the one of the biggest corporation.
Mm.
Sorry.
No. Just move closer. Just move closer to the microphone. Then I'm very happy.
He told me basically not to touch this, and I did touch it. I'm sorry.
So I have a do not touch sticker on it.
I know. Anyway, so I got this corporate job, but it was in plan that I go there for like a year and a half. Mm. I save some money, and then I do freelancing. And in the end, it was 1 year.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't for you. I mean, you wouldn't.
I think it depends on the corporate, like the office. This was like a huge one, and you were just like one small part of some huge system, and also like doing some career and like going some up or like nicer, more interesting position wasn't really possible.
Mm.
Probably better money and everything, but like. I don't know, I didn't feel like I can.
That
grow
wasn't
there.
The motivation for you, wasn't the money necessarily.
No, and it was just like. I much prefer work when I can have some influence on what's happening actually, not just clicking something in the system.
Yeah. And that's when you kind of go into, when I met you, you were busy doing guidebooks, for example. I remember you went on a long trip to Thailand where you wrote or updated an earlier version of a guidebook. So you did this a lot, right?
Yeah, so basically I left this office and I started to teach. I started to do translations, and also it was still during university. I got offered to write a guidebook in Prague because they found me somewhere and they knew I'm into tourism, and also I speak Czech and I live here. So it was perfect. So for me it was super exciting, you know, to write your own book and everything.
Mm.
So I stopped. So I started to work with two biggest publisher houses in Poland. And also traveling a lot, because this was for many, many years like totally my biggest passion, totally, even besides writing guidebooks, just for me.
Mm.
But actually, I have to destroy everyone's dreams. That's a shitty paid job, because everyone think, wow, that's so amazing. Wow, they pay for your trip. You go for 1 month in Thailand and you get everything paid, and then you get paid for the job. Nope. Maybe in some other countries, I don't know, maybe Lonely Planet pays well, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really like from the money you got, maybe you pay your trip and maybe something is left. So it's more like home-based stuff.
Yeah, but it's just an experience.
Yeah, I totally don't regret it, but this is the reason I stopped doing this, because like in 10 years I was doing this, the money didn't get better.
Mm.
And even, you know, even inflation.
Yeah. but you kind of been doing a mixed bag of everything, teaching, translations, and this. And then one of the things that I wanted really to focus on with you today is burlesque.
Yes.
Because you got into that a few years ago, and I don't know so much about it. I've seen you and I've seen a few burlesque shows. There's kind of a burlesque scene here in Prague and has been for at least almost 10 years. I think I saw my first show like 10 years ago. And funnily, when I saw you the first time, it was in the same place where I saw burlesque first time. But so what is burlesque? Where does it come from?
So, I started a few years ago and now it's like super the biggest passion. I think it's exchanged the traveling for some at some point. Burlesque, so it coming from America. It's actually one of not many art styles, let's say, which comes from America, besides like jazz, for example. What is it? Okay, no. It's actually, yeah, it's I called it like a performance art. It's not really a dance. Some people say it's like burlesque dancer, and I would say burlesque performer. So you do some performance, which is about like 5 minutes, one act, and it can be totally different topics or different styles. You can do whatever you want. You can do classic burlesque, for example, which is like connected to the corset, to the feather de fans, to the suspender. How is it in English? You know the thing.
Yeah, that puts the pantyhose on.
Yeah. Oh, I totally forget. Sorry. Or you can do some neo-burlesque, let's say, and it's you can do some latex stuff or fetish or funny numbers or whatever. Mm. So you can do basically everything you want in this, and it's you're getting striptease in it. So you strip actually and tease.
Mm-hmm.
So you take off the clothes, and the most common is that you stayed, like you always stayed with your panties,
mm-hmm.
and you stay without the bra, but on your nipples are something which is called pasties, mm-hmm. or pasties with tassels. This is like the thing which is like you can
roll it
and so
it around,
on.
Yeah.
And so you're using a lot of body and like kind of sexuality, but it doesn't have to be sexy. Actually, it can be scary. It can be funny.
Mm. How did you get into it? I mean, what triggered you to get there?
I was living in Žižkov, in the so-called Lower Žižkov, and near...
That's a rough hood.
Yeah, it's like lower than Vilkovo when we met. Mm-hmm. And I was living one street there, and around the corner, they were opening a bar, which is called Cardinals. It doesn't exist anymore. And we were having house party, and one of my friends said, "Hey, my friend is opening a bar, let's go there."
Mm.
So I went around the corner actually to this bar, and there was a burlesque show. And I totally loved it. First time in my life, I've never heard about burlesque, even like Dita Von Teese, like people know or something. Uh-huh. Never, nothing. And I like it very much. So I was like often going there. I was taking all my friends there for the shows. I think I took a few dates.
Yeah.
I don't know what the guy were thinking about me, but whatever. And so I started to be interested in it. So I was Google more, and I saw this show, which is still going on in Royal.
Yeah.
And in Vinohradská, I think, street.
Mm.
And also I saw that there are some workshops, like semester workshops, and that time it's called Prague Burlesque Academy, and that time it was run by Miss Cool Cat and Angelina Angelic together. Now they have different schools, and so I signed in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the first hour, I remember one of my friends, she went dressed with like it's called turtleneck shirt, you know, like this.
Yeah,
this
that goes up.
It was so funny. And every lesson we get more and more undressed, because at the first lesson we didn't know what to expect. Like, what do you do there, you know? And it was great experience. And I do like kind of 2 semesters.
Mm.
It totally doesn't prepare you for being a performer.
Mm.
Definitely not. You have to, yeah. So basically what I wanted to say, it's for everyone. And
what about men? Are men in this?
Of course.
A lot or?
Not a lot. It's minority, definitely, but they are. Sometimes it's called boylesque, but not necessary. I call it burlesque because not everyone who you think you look like a man or was born like man identified as a performer, as a man, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So then it kind of got complicated. So I kind of say burlesque for everything, also for men or whatever.
Yeah.
So basically this workshops, they are for everyone. And this is more like kind of connecting to your body, maybe to some sexuality. And it's very good for like body positivity stuff and like body image and just like think good with your body, which a lot of women struggling.
Mm.
And in the end of the second kind of semester, there was beginner's night actually in Barn Books. When you saw me performing like half year ago again. And I performed there my act about the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, this was so stressful. And I literally thought this is the first and the last time. I never expected
You were never going to do anything more?
I wasn't thinking about it. I was more like, it was super stressful to prepare all of this.
Uh-huh.
But I felt like, come on, it's some opportunity to do something fun. You cannot just get cold feet.
Mm.
So I did it and I got like super feedback from people and everyone. So I felt like, okay, let's try. And I'm a person, when I do something and I love something and I don't try stuff for 2 months. If I said like, let's do it, I do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave myself maybe a year and we'll see. Mm. And it starts kind of working more and more and more, you know.
Mm. And you say it's not like necessarily sexual. What is it like? Because in some way, I think, as you say, like it always when I've seen it, it involves somehow reducing the number of clothes on the body and showing more. So in some way it's erotic, but it's fun at the same time. I have a really hard time somehow placing this. You know, is this sex work, or is it entertainment? Is it erotic, or is it dancing, or you know? Or
I said it's art. For me, it's performance art. That's why, because it can be everything. You can do everything with your body. The thing when you, I think, we're struggling if it like if it's sexual or not, is because mostly women does burlesque, and in general, everywhere women body is sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, in all the discourse, in ads, everywhere. So men bodies are not as sexualized. So this is one thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing, I think it's a lot if it's it is sexual, but it's a lot about owning your sexuality, not being that much a sexual object. And the third thing, not many people know, and they're very surprised that most of the audience, or I think all of the burlesque shows I've been or performed to, are women. So it's not necessarily something which have to get you horny or something.
But does you know? It? Do you think it does, though? I mean, do people get aroused?
Sure, I guess. But also women, like, they're like, men are more shy to come after the show, I think. But often, I always go, when I perform, I always go to the audience to get a drink, because, you know, like, you want to get feedback. And if you're in backstage, nobody will come to backstage and say, like, I loved your performance or something. And I like this energy people give me. So I always go, and very often, like, the group of girls coming, and they're like, oh my God, this was amazing, really. I'm totally hetero.
This voice, Katarina, is, by the way, very good.
Somebody. Should I read erotic novels or something like that?
I don't know. But
that they love the show. And what is important for me, and it's also the audience is majority women, it means this is important for women. This is not something you do to, like, make horny men, which is nothing bad. Totally fine. I nothing against. But this is also something which is important for women who are not homosexual. And I think the thing is that they want to see, they see some bodies which are often kind of not perfect in the sense, like,
you don't
this.
Have those stereotypes in it. You don't have this body image that, oh, you have to be like this to be a burlesque, not like
actually,
in ballet or whatever.
Yeah, they see, like, I have some fat belly and maybe I have some cellulite or something, and my body
and
is totally
matter.
Not like cosmopolitan body. Like, no. And they see a performer like that, which is amazing on the stage. It's like star, I'm doing air quotes, but you mean like the star of the moment. And they see, oh my God, This girl looks like me, like the body is the same, and she's a great performer. Doesn't mean like she will be a great performer, but it means like my body can be also kind of like appreciated, you know. So yeah,
you don't have it like with a lot of dance performances where you know you have this kind of, how do you say, diversity in this that you
definitely
don't necessarily see in other.
Definitely.
And I on that I wanted to. So if we take, like, burlesque versus, for example, pole dancing or striptease in the sense of a strip club, I mean, it's a very different thing. It's a totally different, because
the funny thing is, that's a big, like, discussion around it, and also in burlesque scene, because it is different and it's the same. Like, there was, like, burlesque and striptease are like sisters. You know, it's maybe a bit different, like in striptease, especially, I think, I'm not super in the striptease scene here, and so I'm not totally sure, but the costumes are not that important, and the burlesque costumes are like super important, and, but, you know, burlesque, it is striptease, you strip there, but you tease actually a lot, so it's super connected, it's something maybe a bit different, but it's the same at the same time.
Yeah, but the audience is different, I guess, because if you go into a strip club or pole dancing, it would be 90% men.
Yeah, definitely. I was to some strip club here, and that time I didn't like it that much, because there was less the meaning which I see in burlesque often, because for me, burlesque, it's often not about the body and the beauty and being beautiful lady on the stage. It's often about some strength, some message you're having. There is a lot of, not much in Czech Republic, but in Poland, for example, in the scene, there's quite a lot of like activists acts as well, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. So it can be super diverse. It could be funny. You know, you could be somebody, you can see somebody who's fat, thin, tall, whatever. Mm. It's more diverse. And I think more people will find something there. But it's also like some burlesque dancers, they say like, oh, striptease is totally different and like kind of looking like down on striptease. And I'm totally against this attitude because like this is just something a bit different. But you also work with your body kind of.
Mm. But then because in burlesque, I mean, there is a lot of music and kind of showmanship or yeah, I mean, you could have someone swallowing fire or something. I mean, that you have a lot of these kind of extras. So it's, what's the difference between burlesque and cabaret? Is it the same thing, or but burlesque is just shorter, or you know, shorter shows, or?
I think in cabaret, it's something else. Like in cabaret, you can have a burlesque act.
Mm.
From what I know, and also there are some, could be some dance shows which are maybe a bit sexy, but you don't undress there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that often people think about the movie burlesque,
yeah,
and they think that's burlesque, but actually in movie burlesque there is no burlesque.
No, that's more
there is cabaret dance. Yeah. This is like a bad.
And cabaret is actually usually more people on the stage at once, and
I think it's more like a shows that can be bigger or smaller, but there is somebody singing. I think cabaret, it's not. It can be. I think the kind of a dance, you know, like the dance of the chair, or like. Can be a bit like a sexy, but it's you're not undressing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think a cabaret can be also like the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had in Brno when I performed, we had some big show about the history of cabaret.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like a dancers, there was like a, with feather fans, there was burlesque, there was acrobats, there was singers and so on. So it's more like mixed, yeah. I would say.
That's maybe closer to a circus in a way, or...
Kind of, maybe, yeah.
A bigger performance.
Or like a variety show or something like that.
Mm. Mm. And so the scene here in Prague has been growing. I mean, it's in multiple, now as you said, there are two burlesque schools already, or two different courses that you can take.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Multiple places where you can perform. I know that you've been performing in Berlin, I think. You've been performing in Brno. You've been, I mean, Berlin is not in the Czech Republic, but, you know, like kind of the neighboring cities. Is it becoming a big thing here now?
I think it's bigger and bigger, and it's the same in Poland. In Poland, last year, there was 10 years of burlesque.
Mm-hmm.
And it started like something nobody really know what is it. And in Poland, it was... Like the woman who started this, she was just looking on the YouTube, on the YouTube movies or something like that, how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely growing. And I'm like in some kind of, I would say, midway. So I'm at the beginning, I never performed before on the stage. I'm not a dancer or something, like, never, ever. So it was everything new for me.
Mm.
So at the beginning, I was traveling everywhere I could perform, and somebody wanted me to perform just for free.
Yeah,
sometimes I go to Vienna, perform there, took a night bus, and in the morning I went to work for free, of course, or paying for the bus or something, because I needed to know people, do networking, and the most important to gain experience and some skills.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like started already last year to perform more for money. And I get in Brno, there's this new amazing place, Cabaret de Pêche, which is super beautiful. And I think it's the most beautiful stage in whole Czech Republic.
Mm.
And they started to do a show, and there's like professional stage and backstage. And it's super beautiful. It's in a style like a Paris cabaret or something like that. So I perform there on a regular basis now in two shows.
And since you started in this, what's that, like 2 years ago?
It was actually, formally it was 3 years ago, but I would, if you like, there was pandemic, you know, like, so minus that, I would say like actively 2 years.
And in during that time, you see a big difference. I mean, are there more and more performers or more and more shows?
In 2 years? I don't think so. No? Like sometimes I still feel like a new one.
Yeah.
So I don't think there are like a bit more, but it's not like much growing. But I think the scene is growing and the more and more people knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
And also the biggest show, which is now in, which is amazing, and I totally recommend it, in the Royal Prague Burlesque. This is, they started burlesque actually in Czech Republic.
Mm.
It's also growing, and every year it's like more mind-blowing, bigger costume, bigger props and everything, like boom, boom, boom. So it got super like professional. Mm. So it was professional for many years, but now it's like more and more, and you see now everywhere in the media. Mm. Or maybe I'm in a burlesque bubble and I feel like everywhere in the media there is burlesque. But
talking about this, you say that the size of the show and the costumes and all the, let's say, the things around it and all the extras and the props. I've seen you do a show. I think I saw a video of you do a show where you use a bathtub.
Yes.
So you own a bathtub. It's a real bathtub.
Yes. It's this retro style bathtub. It's in Brno in the cabaret there. I miss it.
And you put water in it?
Yes.
And then you perform your act out of that bathtub?
Partly yes and no, and then in.
But just to give an idea about the work behind this, so you travel with your bathtub from Prague to Brno, which is
it's like bathtub is actually in Brno, but right with now. Other costumes you travel, and sometimes when I go to Warsaw to perform, oh my god, there is like, you have like huge suitcase, huge bag, some backpack to it with all costumes and my personal stuff and maybe 10% of it. It's really a lot of stuff.
Okay,
and
so the bathtub is, you keep that in one place?
Yeah.
Ah, okay, maybe I thought you were traveling around the country.
No, maybe from some commercial show, if somebody like order it for commercial show, I would transport it and so on. But it's a new thing actually. I bought it in September and I performed twice before they closed.
And you had, it leaked, the bathtub, the first time, right?
So that's actually good that you're asking. And really, I'm really appreciate this question about all the work behind it, because people, they see 5 minutes on the stage, you nice makeup.
That's what I'm trying to bring out.
Looking
here,
beautiful and fabulous with this amazing costumes and everything. But like outside of this, when you're a burlesque performer, you don't have like staff or something like that. Like you don't earn that much money to have staff. So basically you have to have your own idea for the number, what music, what you want to do, what will be the topic or theme of it. Then you have to figure out your own costume. Mostly you're just buying parts, or maybe you can order some designer, but you have to have the idea. So you have to check it. You do choreo. You do your own promotion or contacting some producers, some social media and everything. Then you travel somewhere to be 5 minutes on the stage, you know, for 2 hours. Then you 3 hours before or 2 hours before, you have to prepare yourself, the makeup and everything. Mm. It's really a lot of work.
Yeah, for a very little time. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to do rehearsals for the choreo. Then you change it. Always something doesn't work, like leaking bathtub, for example. Because I thought it's gonna work with the tape. And it didn't. So like last time I performed, there was like there was like a curtain and I was behind the curtain and I was still holding the thingy in the bathtub.
Yeah,
it's not leaking.
It so it wouldn't
and
leak.
They was like, and you know, we see Zoria Blue. And I just get like my hands like wet very fast and I stand and like nothing happening. And then I perform, you know, and it was leaking still, but, you know, survived the show. So a lot of like stupid thing you have to think about how to make it work.
Yeah, and you're sewing your own costumes and everything, right?
Me not. Unfortunately, I'm not manually, you know, kind of.
Uh-huh. But people talented. Are doing some.
Some people
that.
Do it, and because it's also very expensive, even if you don't order it, all the stuff or all the rhinestones and everything.
Mm.
And and even if you don't do it by yourself, you have to figure out what you want, how you're going to undress it in an interesting way. Mm. Then something doesn't work, then it doesn't look like you want it, you have to change it. And I think maybe if you more experience, like I'm getting more and more now, so then you make less mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I did some mistakes with costume. I have like one act I don't perform because I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just part of the process, you know. Yeah. Like,
But you, yeah, you kind of have to be everything. You're the business manager, you're the marketing manager, you're the designer, the architect, everything.
Yeah. And I and this is also for women who do it full time. I don't do it full time. Mm-hmm. But even if you do it full time, you very often do it everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of empowering. And that also means that you have to be kind of like strong personality and know who you are, what you want from it, or kind of trying to find it to make it all work. Because it's not that somebody will come and say like, oh, you do this with this, with this, with this, and then you just repeat. You have to have it in yourself. You have to have the idea. You have to have the...
Yeah, there is no higher authority that is telling you how to do it.
There is no director who will do it. You have to be your own director.
And what I'm talking about that, what, like, now... Because I remember when you told me that you went into this course and I felt that when you started this, then I felt it was more like you just wanted to try it. It was more for fun and it was interesting and so on. And even when you started performing, I kind of wasn't sure that you would go on with it somehow.
Me either.
Yeah, but what do you want out of this? How do you see this go?
I would love to do it like professionally. Mm. I'm not saying full time, but still, even if you do it full time, you can still do it some other maybe stuff. I'm still feel like I'm totally at the beginning, even if I put, oh my God, so much time, so much energy, so much effort, so much money in it. Wow. So even still, I'm totally, I feel like kind of a lot of ahead.
You still have a lot to learn.
You always have, I guess, but I don't know, like there is some stuff which some new shows happening and then maybe, I don't know, we'll see.
And this, because I know you are, you're a podcaster, activist, feminist, teacher, translator, burlesque dancer. How is the relationship between feminism and burlesque?
That's a great question, because this was my struggle at the very beginning, because I always, or for many years, I was thinking about myself as a feminist, and this was, I saw in burlesque like 90% of feminism, and the 10 was kind of bugging me, because it's still, you kind of objectify yourself, maybe, but then I think it through more and more. And I don't see it now. And I think burlesque is super feministic. Even if the people think like you're doing something when you undress yourself, it cannot be, because people think like, oh, feminist has to be ugly with no makeup and not shaved legs or something. Yeah. Which is fine, not wearing makeup and not shaved legs, like whatever, do whatever you want. But you it's hard people to put you in this stereotype of feminism. And it is because it's very empowering. It gives you the power over your body and your sexuality. And you're not the object on the stage. I think you are the one who rules it, the situation. So this first thing. Second, as we mentioned before, most of the audience are women, and women need to see different bodies which looks great and are great performers. Because for me, burlesque, it's mostly not about the looks, but it's about the power and energy you have. Maybe energy is the best. This is, for me, it's like working with energy on the stage. What can I get it from myself there and take back and so on. So if you have kind of the charisma energy, I believe it doesn't matter that much how do you look. Maybe it's a bit different than if you do more like totally commercial stuff, like some company evenings or something. Maybe they want somebody who looks like more like this stereotype of perfect women for it. But for burlesque show and even the careers, there are many performers who are big or thin or small or black or men with dress or something or transsexual or whatever.
There are drag queens in this as well, right?
Yeah, kind of. I think it's a close thing, you know. It's not the same, but it's very, very close, definitely. So, yeah, I think it's totally feministic.
That kind of connects us to the other thing, which I know that over the last, let's say, few months or since last autumn, I think you've been very active with, which is that back in your good old home country, Poland. I call it Prince because of Prince Polo. We have this Prince of Polo chocolate in Iceland. It's the biggest chocolate ever since the 50s, you know. And when you buy Prince of Polo next time in Poland,
it's manufactured in my city. Do you know that? It is.
I have to go on my pilgrimage.
It was Olza company.
Yep.
Which is the river, and now they bought with some bigger company, but it's in my city.
Really. Guys in Iceland, we have a woman from the city where they make the Prince Polo.
Yes, and my childhood friend, her mother worked there, so she had a lot.
Wow, that's a dream life.
Yes.
Anyway, in Poland, but they have been doing some really interesting things there. And so basically, if I understand it correctly, then as of November last year, then the constitutional court of Poland banned abortion, and the government by the constitution has to enforce any instruction from the constitutional court.
Yes and no. So the thing was, before the end of October last year, we had something which it was called abortion compromise, which was made in 1993. Between, let's say, government and church, more or less. And abortion was legal only when it's after the rape. And it's like an incest or something like that. So, like, I don't know, with your brother, etc. Then if it's a big threat to the health of the or life of the women. Or if there is like a big problem with the baby or the embryo. That it can be like some genetic stuff. I'm not sure if I have the English vocabulary.
Yeah,
for
but
it.
Basically, you know, if I mean, the health of the fetus is endangered, there are
the three reasons. And in the end of October, the constitutional court, which is not super legal actually, it shouldn't be have right to have anything because of the political connections and so on. It said that in the last case with the possible genetic problems. Or, for example, if the baby will die one day after it's born, and you know it already, abortion is illegal.
So on the argument that it has the right to be born and it has to be right to be baptized and buried, right?
More or less something like that. That it's like a life, more or less.
Yeah.
Which is, okay, let's maybe just the low stuff.
Yeah.
So there was like this protest because they were trying to do it for many years. So we had still, it's March now, we have still protest in Poland.
Yeah, but wait, take me back a little bit. So until this happens, it was possible to have an abortion and for almost any reason. I mean, it was these three reasons?
No, just these three reasons.
Just these three reasons.
So what
if you wanted to have an abortion because you just didn't want to have a kid?
Your problem.
What did you do then? What was the reality?
Yeah, so first, that's good that you're mentioning first. Even if, even in a situation that you could do it legally, in many, many cases, it was impossible because they're doing the problems there. The doctor will tell you that she's her or his conscious doesn't allow it. So then you have to find another doctor and the clock is ticking. And there is this big case of Alicia Tysiąc, who got almost blind because of that. And the doctor says she will get blind when she get another baby. They didn't allow it to do it. So she had to have the baby. And it was in European Union and whatever stuff. So even in these cases, it was really hard. And the numbers, it's the legal abortions was 1,500 per year. That's a 38 million country. This is like not possible. It's not possible. Not mentioning other way that after the rape, there was a problem with the courts and so on. So even if you have this legal right to do it, it was very hard
impossible.
To do it.
Yeah.
So what about like illegal? So of course there is this underground when they do illegal one, the doctors. And I heard the stories that somebody tells you in the hospital like, oh, I cannot do it, but this is my contact and do it after work. or you just go abroad to somewhere, to some other countries which allowed it, or you can order pills and do it by yourself, especially if it's under 12 weeks.
And technically, that part, even now, they eliminated this possibility for if the embryo is or the fetus is unhealthy or has no chance of living. They eliminated that, right? So they took out one of out of those three options.
And they think about taking the option about the rape as well.
Uh-huh.
And because you always want more.
Yeah. But what about contraception? Is that...
That's a big problem in Poland. Because when you... Not anticonception, but in general. Because when you look at the behavior of government and church as well... So, like, sexual education, very bad at school. Sometimes they want, there are some initiative that maybe it will be illegal or something like that. So, no good, long and well-run sexual education.
Mm.
Contraception, I guess, in big cities, okay, in smaller, problematic. Mm. The pill after, only on the prescription, which is like, what? What doesn't make sense, you know? Mm. Now you have this e-prescription, so it's
easier. So you basically, if you want to have the afterwards pill, you need to have sex at the doctor's office.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost, to be able to make it in
now
time.
It's easier because you can. There are websites when you do it on the online. Mm-hmm. So they send you the online. So it's easier. But still, like, what? Then you get pregnant. Oh, it's super important. You know, you have to keep it. You have to keep it. Mm-hmm. 9 months after, it got burned. Born, not burned, and they don't care if your kid is like handicapped or something.
Yeah.
They don't really care that much, you know. There's not much money for families, or then mostly women who take care of handicapped. So only these 9 months are interesting, you know.
Yeah, everything else is fine. They're fine with the contraception. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
Then, you know, okay, they just want to make sure that anyone who gets pregnant goes through and has the child, and then they don't give a shit what happens afterwards.
Yeah, so they don't give shit what happened before or after. Mm-hmm. Just the 9 months are important, which is absurd, because if you're against abortion, do everything to prevent the abortion.
But how does this happen? I mean, now it's year 2021. We're talking about Poland, which is one of Europe's biggest countries with almost 40 million inhabitants. And how can we be... This kind of feels like we're going backwards. How can this happen?
I don't know. Church?
Yeah, but
no, first thing which is important, and so after this we had the protests in Poland, whole November, whole December, still now there was protest on Monday now on International Women's Day, there is next protest next week, all the time we're protesting.
Mm.
And actually 70 to 80% of Poland population is against the restrictions that made last year. This is very important. So it's not like all the Polish people are totally fucked up and we want to women to get born to
kiss, give birth.
Yes, thank you for English lesson. Give birth to like super sick
children
or something like that. So literally 70 or 80% are against the restrictions, but it's still happening because of the power. And I think the easiest interpretation of it is church supported the ruling party in Poland when there was the elections, very much supported, and very much supported also in the negative propaganda against other parties and other groups of citizens.
Mm.
And now I guess it's time to pay back.
But so you say the church has the power, but in the end it's people that vote. Somebody voted this government.
Mm.
Who votes this government?
Yeah, but it's not easy. It's not like you vote. People sometimes vote because they promise them some more money or on something, for example. Like they get, I think they also won the last election because they gave 500 zloty, which is like 3,000 crowns per kid.
That's 100, 110 euros. Per month?
Per month, per kid, which is great. And I'm not sure how does it work for everyone, even for rich people. I'm not sure. But like there is a lot of super poor people. And for them, it's like, oh my God, it's amazing money. Which is also problematic because then, you know, women are disappearing from the job market and so on. Well, that's maybe for a longer discussion. So they give this kind of like motivation to vote for them. So not always people, you know, think like it's sometimes it's hard to decide. And nowadays also this party, since few years, they totally control the television. So basically it's like propaganda in television. And I'm not saying it like, I guess in many countries, this kind of the public television and public media are somehow influenced by the politics. But in this case, it's propaganda. This is like you look on this print screens from this and it's, if it wasn't real, it's super funny what they're saying there. It's so absurd. It's like, what?
But why is the church so big in Poland? I mean, like, because like if you look here we are in a neighboring country, Czech Republic. No one gives a shit about the church, you know. No one really believes in God as such, you know. And yeah, it's very, I mean, the church, why is that so strong in Poland?
Like, I think the Czech Republic is a very specific country because if you look to all the other countries, the church is somehow important there, like Italy, Slovakia, Spain, Portugal. Maybe not,
yeah, but not
connected,
this,
not in this way. I think first thing, and for many people like church and faith, I think it's a part of some tradition, like that you don't really think about it like I choose this faith because something. It's just like you do it. You just go to church every Sunday, if not your neighbors look like you don't think it through, I think. Second, maybe in the communist time, church was kind of supporting opposition a bit. So they, or maybe communists were too afraid to do something with church. And yeah, they just want the power, I think. Like, to be clear, because I sometimes in some other interviews about the activism, I was like the church. I'm totally not against any faith or being a part of the church or something. I'm totally for it. I'm atheist, but I totally understand the need of it. But Catholic Church in Poland as an organization, I think it should be banned. Like so many, it's like a mafia. There are so many affairs, that so many cases when they cover up the some pedophile within, and they just, instead of like sending them to jail or punished or kicked out of the organization, they just cover it for many years and send them when they abuse other kids. So it was also a big topic last few years after a few movies.
But someone is, do you know someone who has a different opinion than you? I mean, do you, is there someone like, if you, I don't know, if you talk to your mom or if you would talk to your granny or something like that?
Different opinion on what?
On this, that just
on
thinks
abortion,
that,
church.
Yeah, the church and the abortion and what is happening with this, because it looks like the country is going a little bit backwards. It kind of looks like you almost have like a some sort of a dictatorship or totalitarianship going on, and then you're saying propaganda in the media. It's like you're describing Hungary, but in Hungary, I don't think the church is super involved.
We're gonna be in Hungary in a few years if nothing changed.
But who do you know that thinks this is fine?
I don't know much people. I cannot think of anyone from my friends or family who voted this party. But I'm in this bubble, you know. It's like you don't, you are in some social bubble with people who think like you, and like I wouldn't go on dates with somebody who said that patriarchy doesn't exist. I actually kind of had this conversation with some guy who was inviting me on a second date, and he was very persistent. And I said, like, come on. And we have this conversation about it. So you don't, like, kind of spend your time with somebody who has totally different views than you on stuff. Because, like, no.
And here you are on my podcast.
Are you you're against abortion? And
No. But I have different views than you on a lot of things. But I'm just willing to listen
but
to
it's
yours.
It's not like it's not. Don't get me wrong. It's not about. My friends also have different views. We discuss a lot, even about politics. But I mean, there is some basic stuff which you should kind of agree on.
Yeah, but is that in the end? I mean, maybe that's not relevant necessarily to the topic, but actually, isn't that part of the problem that we are now? We are all of us in some sort of a bubble or a silo where we are only coming across opinions and ideas and ideologies that we agree with. We don't almost even touch the other ones. So I've often taken this example because I'm from Iceland. It's a small country. We had three newspapers, you know. So you kind of read all of them as a kid, and you had to read everything because there was nothing else to read. And so you saw the socialist side. You saw the Democrat kind of mid side, and then you saw the right side. So you're kind of exposed to things from different sides. And that meant that you could at least respect them. Mm-hmm. It didn't necessarily mean that you would agree with it. And so I'm just curious because, you know, I know a lot of people from Poland, and looking at this from the outside, this is very interesting to see that I feel that this country is going backwards. It's not pushing female liberty, feminism, women into business or anything like that. No, and the same is happening in Hungary. They have a monologue on the state TV about that the woman's role is in the home and blah, 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 and only a woman with a vagina can call herself a woman. It's so against what is going on in the bigger Western world.
Mm.
And then when I ask my Polish friends, do you know anyone who voted this, who likes this, who supports this? No one knows anyone.
Yeah, but there are also some of your social bubble. They're like middle class or, I don't know, high class or something. There are people who travel.
Yeah, but I mean,
here,
they must have,
you know,
parents. They must have parents or grandparents or something.
Like,
you know?
Answering about your question about the social bubble, like, there is one thing. Like, for example, I can very happily like discuss about some idea about some economical stuff, let's say, or how to manage COVID or something, blah blah. But I won't discuss much stuff with somebody who is openly racist or sexist.
Mm.
Or any other homophobic or something. Because this is like, I don't want to have friends like that who are homophobic. This is the basic values you have to agree on. Like that all the people are equal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't if I don't have this basic value, like it's really hard to, like what, I don't want to, like sometimes I had fights about it or something, but you know what I mean? Like, I can discuss about some other stuff, how to do something with this or
yeah,
this.
Yeah, but there are some fundamental values that you feel that you need to have in common. It's a very complicated topic. Yeah. I'm just curious because, you know, I always hear this and I ask my Hungarian friends and my girlfriend, you know, so who voted this guy in Hungary? And I don't know. And then you see the politics here in the Czech Republic. You have a alcoholic president and a corrupt prime minister. And then you ask who voted them. I don't know. And still, these guys got voted. And then, you know, like, someone must be voting them. Mm. And I'm just curious
like
about
my
who.
My family is not religion, for example, and it's more like against and something like that. So, I don't know.
But you left the church, or you tried to leave the church. Tell me how that was.
Yeah, because in my case, actually, so the thing was, I was baptized.
Yeah, and you automatically you get into the church, right?
Like automatically, your parents has to take you there. But my parents, the last time they were in church actively when they get married. Mm. That was the last time, besides some funerals or something, but like to go to church. Because it was like 70s in Poland, so this is what you do. You wanted to live together, you get married. Nobody really think it through that much.
Mm.
And then I asked my mom why I was baptized, if they were not believing in anything. And she said that she did it because she was worried that maybe I will be kind of having problems when I will be in school or something like that. So that's why she does it. Mm. But then I didn't get any education. We have these religion classes when you go to school. And I wasn't sent there. My mom asked me if I want to go. I said no, and I never went. And I was the only one in my school who didn't. And I didn't get this other, the sacraments, or I've never went to the do church, like to pray or something. I have nothing connected to this. Like I'm totally not an active member, but I'm still as a member of the church. And this is why when you read the statistics in Poland, there is 95 Catholics, but I was as well this Catholic. 95%. Yeah. But I was also in this 95% before. So yeah, I decided to get out last year. It was too much for me. I don't want to have
that's
anything.
That's a complicated process, right?
Yeah, you have to go to the this priest with the paper, and he has to convince you that not, and then you have some few weeks to think about it, and then you go again. But I kind of convinced him on the phone that I don't have anything connected to this organization, and he actually told me that I shouldn't be saying organization. This is not organization. This is a church or something. He treated me like a small kid, actually.
But they try everything they can to keep as
kind
many
of,
members
yeah,
in.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I had this quite smooth, but I have stories that somebody was calling police.
But behind all this abortion issue and this is the church and religion, in a way.
Yeah.
You have a burlesque show that you do in a nun outfit,
yes,
which I am a personal fan of. Why is that some sort of a provocation to your roots in a way?
Yeah,
or, yeah.
When I was thinking about this number, it was the idea of my friend actually, and I was thinking it would be my Polish heritage kind of way, and playing with this. It's a bit fetish number, so there is a nun there. I have a whip and something like that. So definitely playing with this. And I always joke that I'm trained. I have a way to get to be the most famous performer in the world. Because if I perform it in Poland and somebody, you know, have problem with this and I go to court and I go to jail for it, then, you know, I will be famous. But for now, I perform it a few times in Warsaw and nothing happened. Maybe next time.
Yeah.
You can get to almost to jail or to court for something.
Yeah,
like that
because
in Poland.
I saw this. They take all insults to the church and to religion very seriously, right?
Yes, that's crazy.
But a little bit back on the abortion thingy. So that was that has been protested since November, and obviously the neighboring countries, they don't have those rules. There it's much more liberal. And in the UK, I think you can go up to 24 weeks for an abortion, 12 weeks.
I think it's the latest in European Union. But this is just like 2% after 12 week or 15 week.
Yeah.
So it's very rare.
Yeah, but it can happen for some specific reasons. But and you here, you with the other Polish women here in Prague, you created an organization.
Yeah, actually, I became activist in the end of October. I was always kind of like sensitive for human rights, and maybe
I know.
It's already you can see from this interview. And actually, when I was 6 or 7, I had the like a magazine made by myself and copied on my parents' photocopy at work, which was like the Club of Friends of Barbie and Animals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was in Scouts and I also support Amnesty International with some translations. So I did always like very close to this stuff. And when the protest started and I was here, I got really like angry and frustrated and kind of powerless. Like I cannot go even to protest on the street. And we kind of met online, like 15 girls who was the same attitude. And we started this project, which is called Ciocia Czesia, anti-Czechia, let's say, Czesia. It's a name, Polish name, Czesia, that's why. And we kind of give support to women or people who need help from Poland, who needs abortion here. And so we mostly, like our main job is to inform. So they write us and we say like, what's possible, what to do, where to go, how much is it, what do you need with COVID and so on, so on.
And like also some arrangements like where to stay and...
Yeah, especially now with the restrictions on the border, it's all very tricky, everything. But sometimes people write and they just ask, how is it possible? And then disappear. Sometimes they ask, but then they decide to order pills because it's kind of, especially in the first few weeks, it's the easiest way. You order it online. There is like a page, Women Help Women, and it's free. but there is suggested donation, 75 euros. I think it's because of the law, you know, cannot sell pill just like that.
Mm.
And you do it at home with some instructions.
Mm.
And some people, they get the information and we know that they go to clinic. And some, they also need sometimes help, like some of our volunteers help with the car or something like that. So, mm-hmm.
So it's kind of an active help. It's not like you're not collecting just money to send somewhere or something. It's you're actually talking to the people.
This is our main thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. So first month of our existence, we were doing a lot of research, what's possible, what now. It's a bit tricky with the law, or it was, and it's still. And now the money we support, this is only, we all work for free.
Mm.
And the money we collect, this is only for people who are in bad financial situations.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, sometimes not everyone who gets pregnant have money to pay like, 250 euros, I think it will be in here, and to travel and now pay for a PCR test and everything. So we support them full amount or maybe part if they need, but it's minority. But
I've seen, I've read a few articles about this organization, and it's really like a grassroots in a way. And it's all Polish women that are involved.
Polish women. Actually, there is one Polish Czech from Ostrava. And actually, it's like, it's collective, we called it, because we are not like officially anywhere like NGO or something. We don't want to do paperwork. We want to concentrate on the work.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. Are there other things that the, you know, like, is there some other things that the government has been doing and the church together that where you feel like, because it's really like it's taking the female rights and let's say feminism very much backwards, this whole thing. And I guess, you know, it's degrading the woman's right to choose what is right for her body and what's right for her life. And are there other examples of this which you see then in Poland now politically or culturally that are kind of, let's say, pushing women aside or pushing them down?
Like, definitely, but this actually happened in Czech Republic as well. This was like, if you followed on Monday, there was International Women's Day, and there was like a lot of greetings of the prime minister or president or whatever, other people in public figures, and you read the greetings, you want to kill yourself. Thank you for being so beautiful or supporting and suffering for us and blah, 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 blah. This is like, this is just like, what? What? We are in 21st century. This is like you thanking us for being beautiful. This is the main role of women nowadays still. Oh, okay. Definitely. It's like it's a lot of the same problems. And here, like in Czech Republic, it seems to be like more cool and less racist, which I don't think it is, than Poland. The big difference in Poland with this, it's people are more vocal and aggressive sometimes. So I don't think they're more or less racist as Czech people. This is the Czech people doesn't have to need to like show it that much. And with women rights, for example, in Czech Republic, there is 20% pay gap, which is one of the biggest in the European Union.
Yeah, but
so, you know.
But now Poland has taken this step with the abortion. I mean, is there something? I mean, will do you think that it will get worse?
I think it will get worse, but also as an idealist, I totally believe in this energy we did created, because really people got so pissed. It was like they were collecting the drops for last few years in Poland. You another drop. What is it? Another. And I think this was the last drop and people get on the streets. We have the biggest protest in decades in Poland. In last year, like really the biggest one. So I think people are over it. They are so pissed. And I don't think it will happen this year, but it will have influence. This is like, I don't know, with communists, like when the solidarity started, it took them like 10 or 20 years to do something. So it might take some years, but it will work, I'm sure.
But it's just interesting that like Poland is one of the fastest growing economies. It's, you know, like
We was the only country when there was a crisis in 2008, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you were doing great.
The only country in European Union who was on the plus, actually.
Yeah, I remember. That's when I started going to Poland for business, and things were just booming. And you know, the people that I know from Poland, both that I've met here and in Iceland and in Denmark, has always been, you know, people that want something. They're hardworking and so on. And I just never thought I would see this, that somehow the church and the government would be in bed together. But when is the election there?
We had election last year.
Hey, that's crazy. Mm. So you gotta wait 4 more years to punish them.
Yeah, with the president election, because the big problem is always that the president is from the same party as the ruling party, and it was super close. Mm. It was so close that the other guy won. Mm. Like, oh my God.
So you're stuck with this 4 more years at least.
Yeah.
It's 5 years term in Poland or
four parliament.
Okay. And in the meantime, what do you think will happen? I mean, you will continue your Czech auntie. There will be a big business in underground abortions in Poland that will be harmful for women.
Mm.
Probably they will sell more contraceptions there than before.
I don't know about that. I think it's like contraception. I don't think this will be the effect of it. Like, if you take it, you take it. You know, sometimes you take contraception and you still got pregnant because something doesn't work. You know, I think it's, I don't know, we're going to fight till we smash the patriarchy.
Big old patriarchy. But what does the EU say about this?
I'm not sure how is it like that. I think they're trying to put some pressure on it, but to be honest, I don't want to say something which is not not right. So I don't know.
But I have a feeling with that. I have a feeling that the EU needs those countries so bad because the UK left that they will let them get away with anything.
Well, I think the people who rule in Poland now, they will be happy, you know. Mm. They want to. There are some more and more voices to get out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to be the trend now, unfortunately. Or unfortunately, I don't know. I'm not a big EU fan, but I actually don't really care. So this, in some way, you know, like I was thinking before we talked here, and then I was thinking, okay, can we talk about abortion and burlesque in the same thing? And we kind of came to the mutual conclusion that it's just a different side of the same thing or same matter, which is female feminism and female rights.
Yes.
And what, you know, how do you see that developing? I mean, in the light of this, I mean, it's going to get worse. Is there something specific that you're worried about that, you know?
In Poland?
Yeah.
I think it's going to get worse. It's like a handmaid's tale coming.
Mm.
I think that's a wet dreams of the ruling party, the handmaid's tale.
Mm.
We'll see.
But are they talking about something now that they want to change something? I mean, I don't know.
To be honest, I don't. I think they don't give. They don't give a shit about the protests. Mm. I think they just don't care for now.
And I guess you're not going to move back home to Poland.
No, but actually, that's not for the reason. I'm here in Czech Republic 13 years, so I got my citizenship last year, actually, in summer. Mm. So basically, it's not like coming back. This is I built my life here. This is my home. Mm. So like coming back to home, it's coming back to Prague.
Mm.
So it's nothing like against Poland. Poland is a great country. Mm. Maybe it doesn't sound like that here, but it's a super nice country with great people, great art, amazing
beautiful
tourists.
Cities, yeah,
super seaside. Mm. Oh my God, it looks like Dominican Republic, really the seaside there. So, but you know, after 13 years, like what would be the reason to go to Poland? Mm. Because I was born there? Like what? I know.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Prince Polo. Also,
I will bring you some from Jeshen next time.
anyway, so I think we're good.
Can I say something more? Because that's a kind of the thing. We use a lot of word feminism here. Mm. And I know that people don't really understand it as I do. And for me, in feminism is equality of the sexes.
Mm.
And it doesn't mean that women are better than men or something like that, or we hate men or something like that. It's only about equality. And also as a man, you can be a feminist. So
yeah, but it's interesting.
That's important to say, because sometimes people think that feminism means you hate men.
No, but this is a very interesting thing that you say this, because I had... previously had Sylvie Lauter here, which you know,
yes,
the journalist.
Yes, I know. She did interview me with me.
Yeah. She's a journalist and she's kind of like almost the face of feminism in a way, yes, at least in the media here. And then I had the girls from Future Females, which is like an organization that is helping entrepreneurs and helping women starting businesses and so on. And it's really, really interesting that all of you, and not just all of you, but everyone that I speak to here about feminism, every female that I speak to about feminism here starts by telling me, I'm not one of those who hates men or things. Why is that the impression here?
You misinterpreted myself. I didn't say I'm not one of those. I said, this is the definition of feminism. And this is not saying like making some distinguish between me and somebody who is worse or something. It's I talk to people, men and women, about feminism, and they don't know. They think or that feminism means that you are better, women are better than women, or hate them.
Yeah,
which
but
is
why?
Not
why?
True.
Why is that the
media? Or the other thing about feminism is that you want to be the same, and then you have to. They say you, but women are men are different. Yeah, we are different, but. Mm. The same, equal doesn't mean the same. That's totally different thing.
Yeah, it's different things.
So it's not, I don't know feminists who think that we are better than men. Mm. I don't know them. Mm. Call me if you do.
No, but Sylvie
people reacted like that. People react like that when you talk about it.
But Sylvie told me that she has this journalist database where she can search like phrases. And she searched the phrase, I'm not a feminist, but... And she gave like 10,000 results or something from blog articles, news articles.
After about the truth starts.
Yeah, but why does feminism have such a bad reputation?
I don't know. I know. Because of patriarchy. Because this is, of course, because I also grew up in this. And I also have to sometimes, you know, think through my thoughts and my actions that I was also trained.
Mm.
To behave like that or react like that or something, because we all grew up in this. Mm. Me too. So, of course, that the system which dominates here and benefits from this, it wants to keep itself. And feminists, it's a threat for it.
Yeah.
Instead of discussing it, it's better to do the bad reputation of feminism and saying the feminists, they don't shave, they're ugly and they hate men and they didn't have enough sex. Now, that's also, I have enough sex.
Yeah, but you can... Also, you can also turn it around that, where are the moms? Now you have, you know, 2, 3, 4 generations of moms since the liberation of women, let's say, that, you know, started maybe in the 60s, 70s around Europe. And, you know, okay, we had communism here, but during communism, women were very much participants in the workplace and so on. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
And actually, Sylvie told me, so that I quote her once again, she told me that that's one of the reasons why feminism became a bad name, because communists made women work, and that's kind of, they put feminism and communism in the same box because it was like all the women out working. But I could turn it around, because you say patriarchy, and I totally agree with you, as man holding all the power, obviously the system by nature will try and defend that power. But there are also... Over in this part of the world, more than half of the population are women. More than half, because most of the men died in the Second World War. So we still have a deficit where we have more women than men in most of those countries.
Yeah.
All these women are raising all their bloody kids in the patriarchy. But then you're removing the responsibility also from women by blaming it.
I'm totally not saying that. I never said that men are responsible for patriarchy. They benefit from it, so yeah, it's easier. But also, the women also grow up in patriarchy. They sometimes don't see the other options, or maybe the option is easier for somebody, or maybe they don't know much. or enough. So that's why it's important to talk about it. And I had situation when I open it now, I'm not saying on the street like, I'm feminist, but I sometimes talk about stuff and I discuss. And I said, and I had few people who come back to me after some months or something. And they said, like, I started to think about it and blah, blah. And they, I have one friend who became actually open feminist because of talking with me on some topics. She started to think about some topics, analyze it and so on. So she's younger, 10 years. So maybe also there.
For me, so, I mean, for me, feminism is just...
So I'm not against men. I'm against patriarchy.
I know,
which is also fed by, it's called, I think, internalized patriarchy when women also support it.
Mm.
So yeah, that's the important to say. Also, most of my friends, male friends, the closest one, they, or all of them, they are feminist and they actually call themselves feminist.
Yeah, I think it's a very stigmatized word. I don't think, I mean, for me...
That's why you have to say it aloud to, you know, removing the stigma. To saying, like, you don't have to be shy. You don't have to say, I'm not feminist, because you benefit from your really brave grandmothers and grand-grandmothers. Like, the word suffragist was also super nasty and bad and at times, you know, like, being suffragist was like, what, fooey. But there were women who didn't care, and that's why I can vote. That's why I can have education, that I have a right to my own money. So at least by kind of appreciating that what you have now, don't put down other women who want more.
No, I agree. And I agree with you, equal and same is not the same thing. Anyway, Kate, what are you working on now? You have... You have the Czech Conti. I guess that's taking a lot of time, the abortion.
Yeah, it's like volunteer work, but actually now, because of the pandemic, I have a bit more free time to work on it. So this, I do my normal job. Obviously, burlesque, it's stopped totally now. And when it's going to be open, I'm going to go back to performing. So you could come and see me in Prague or in Brno.
And the bathtub.
I'm also, in the bathtub. I'm also thinking about maybe doing some courses of burlesque for in English, actually, because there are quite a lot of in Czech, but for English community, something. And yeah, that's more. And also I have the podcast as well. We started more or less the same time. It's about sexuality, intimacy and body. So this is giving me a lot of fun. That's
great. I like you told me a little bit about it the other day. So each episode has a theme.
Yes.
Unfortunately, guys, apart from you, 10 million Polish listeners from the church, it's...
Amen.
it's in Polish.
Yeah, it is in Polish, yeah.
But every episode has a theme, like masturbation or anal sex or different themes.
It's super open, totally open. And I think the big value of it is my guests are talking in the first person. So this is not like I don't invite a sexologist who will tell about bisexual people.
They're saying tomorrow, their own story.
Yeah, tomorrow I have have a recording of somebody who is bisexual. Or I have the anal sex episode. There was a couple and they were talking a lot about their anal experiences and how to do it. And the guy was actually bisexual as well. So he has also experience with men. So I really care much about this narrative, which is I narrative, not she or he or they. So I think this is very big strength of it. And people got super open about like episode about masturbation guy telling me like the weirdest place you masturbate. And I was like, toilet in the train.
Yeah.
He was telling some stories. Yeah. So if you speak Polish, it's called przy zapalonym świetle.
Yeah. I was hoping I would be invited on it, but I guess I gotta learn Polish.
No, you have to learn Polish. Sorry, it wouldn't work.
But okay, so where can people follow you? You have an Instagram account.
Yeah, it's Zoria Blue with Y.
So it's Zoria with Zeta.
Yeah.
Zeta
Zoria.
Yeah.
Blue, like color.
Yeah, and you have a Facebook
as well. The same.
With the same.
The same. And I have also Instagram of the podcast, but you know.
But the main thing is Zoria, where people can follow up on everything.
And there are also like the tags for the other projects I'm doing. So if you go there and follow me.
And what about the Czech Conti? Because now I know that you there is some charity going on, selling t-shirts.
Oh my God, we have the most beautiful merch ever. I love this t-shirt. I know it's stupid to say because I'm part of this, but it's so beautiful. And it wasn't actually my idea. Somebody approached us and it's a t-shirt, which is fair trade t-shirt. It's 100 cotton, so it's good quality. And you have this graphic, this art on it, which is made, designed by 19 Czech and Slovak artists. And it's kind of like a puzzle, so each artist has some space and can do something in this theme, and in the middle you have this thunder
or lightning
lightning, not thunder, which is the symbol of the protest and the this movement. It's super beautiful. And it costs 100 zloty minimum.
What is that in euros?
Euros 21 and 600 crowns. We normally send it to Czech Republic in Poland, but now we always also have some orders from Canada and US and something. So maybe we'll ask you to get a bit more for the delivery, but it's possible to send it, and super beautiful.
And where are the pages to follow this, the Czech Conti?
It's, yeah, oh my God, this is Ciocia Czesia, the page, C-I-O-C-I-A. C Z Z E S I. Everyone got lost. Me too.
Okay, I will. I will put it in my episode.
And if you go to Zoria Blue, I think it's there as well in some post, or you message me or something. This merch is super beautiful. Really, I would buy it even if it wasn't charity. Promise.
So, guys, listening to this, wherever you are in the world, just check this out. If you believe women should have the right to decide if they're gonna have a child or not, then you want to buy this t-shirt because it's a good cause. And it, I've seen those t-shirts. They actually look really cool. I was hoping that she would bring me one here free of charge, but of course she didn't. So we got your social media profiles. We got the Czech Conti, your podcast, so that my millions of Polish listeners can tune in. And yeah, then I think we're kind of done. Guys, follow the show on Facebook, The Bunker, How the Hell Did We End Up Here. Follow me on Spotify, Apple, Google, and all the other services that it's on. Thanks to the sponsors, The Old Bar in Prague and Alfred.cz. And my Instagram is Midlife Crisis Warrior. My Twitter is Midlife Crisis Warrior. And then The Bunker Prague, I think, is the Instagram page of the show. Kate, it's been a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so
When we drank the first drinks together a few years ago, I never expected that I would be sitting and interviewing
end up
you.
Here. Thanks so much. It was super intense, but super exciting. Enjoy.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.